Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Huff, and this is part two of our podcast on the subject of Alzheimer's disease prevention and treatment. In part one, we went through some of the factors, lifestyle factors, exercise, diet, mental gymnastics, stress, genetics, the effects of certain medications in terms of encouraging Alzheimer's disease, and the effects of environmental pollution. So check out part one for a rundown on those. This, for you, is part two of more news you can use kind of podcast with a protocol that you might find useful, supplements that have been found to be helpful for prevention and treatment of Alzheimer's disease. So let's take a look at some of those. First of all, there are the antioxidants. The antioxidants are important because studies show that free radicals may destroy neurons in the brain. And one of the theories of aging is the free radical theory of aging, in which free radicals damage delicate tissues in the body. Certainly, neurons in the brain and in the sensory organs are very high energy utilizing organs or tiny cells, and as such they give off lots of free radicals, because any kind of energetic process generates free radicals. You can quench free radicals with antioxidants, and that has been shown to be helpful in the eye and in some studies in the ear, and therefore leads us to suspect that antioxidants may be beneficial for the brain, although that's a controversial proposition. Studies in particular have looked at vitamin E, and in some studies, vitamin E has come up short. But the studies actually are controversial, because some studies show a benefit of as much as 2,000 international units of D-alpha tocopherol, which is a form of vitamin E that we actually don't prefer at the Hoffman Center. We no longer use just single narrow spectrum D-alpha tocopherol. We use a mixed tocopherol vitamin E rich in gamma tocopherol, which we think may be an even better antioxidant. Nonetheless, studies have shown benefits of as much as 2,000 international units of vitamin E. So especially a recent study which shows that you can slow down the dependency of Alzheimer's patients on outside help by about as much as 30% by using 2,000 international units of vitamin E for about 2 years. So that was a very, very impressive study, because it actually trumps the effects of some of the medications that are used for Alzheimer's disease, just vitamin E and not even the right type. Other antioxidants that we consider useful, well, we like alpha-lipoic acid because there's signs that it can cross the blood-brain barrier. The concern about vitamin C, for example, is that it may not cross the brain blood-brain barrier, which is a lipid membrane. And vitamin C is water-soluble but not lipid-soluble, so it's less likely to enrich the brain tissue. And alpha-lipoic acid crosses very nicely into the brain and may offer some protection to brain cells against free radicals. Also, we like to use glutathione intravenously. Oral glutathione, in my opinion, it can be beneficial, but probably not as beneficial as intravenous glutathione, which concentrates the glutathione in the bloodstream and bypasses the gastrointestinal tract where the glutathione might be digested and broken down. In intravenous glutathione administration, it goes right in the bloodstream and then crosses over into the brain, where it is one of the premier antioxidants in the body. So that may be helpful. It's certainly part of the protocol that's been adopted by Dr. David Perlmutter, our good colleague in Florida, who's written Grain Brain and many other great books. He prefers to use intravenous glutathione in a rather intensive program for patients with Parkinson's disease and other neurodegenerative diseases, including dementia and Alzheimer's. And we're finding it perks up some of our patients. They really come out moving and feeling better, and they, you know, the proof of the pudding is that they come back for more. And there's no way I can compel them to get the treatments. They know it's beneficial. Okay, other things that are helpful, as I mentioned in part one, a B12 deficiency can be something that mimics Alzheimer's. And so B12 can be beneficial for the brain. especially a form of B12 called methylcobalamin, which is a premium form of B12 that's body-ready, very bioavailable, easily utilized by the brain as a methyl donor. And we noted in part one that there's some people you can test for abnormalities in the what's called the MTHFR pathway. If they have these abnormalities, they're better candidates for supplementation with methyl donors like B12. But in particular, that leads us to another supplement that's very helpful and is actually a part of an approved medication for Alzheimer's disease. It's a nutritional food that's been approved by the FDA with claims that it can slow the progression of dementia and improve memory. It's called serifolin NAC, and what it is, it's high-dose methylated folate. Folic acid, remember, is an artificial form of folate. It is synthetic, and as such, it may not be readily utilizable by the body, particularly people who have the MTHFR mutation. And so we prefer using methylfolate. There is a drug used for Alzheimer's disease that takes advantage of this. As I said, it's called serifolin, and there are several other me-too or copycat drugs along those lines. I prefer using the nutraceutical version from naturals, from vitamin companies, supplement companies. It's identical to the type that's used in the drug. But methylated folic acid in high doses can somewhat overcome the defect that causes people to have poor methylation. Now, one of the signs, and actually a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, is high homocysteine. It's a risk factor for dementia and for cerebrovascular disease. But what I've discovered is there's some people who seem to have abnormal or borderline homocysteine, so we're lulled into a false sense of complacency, but their MTHFR status is abnormal. So even with a seemingly normal homocysteine, they need more B12 and folic acid to complete the pathway in their brain. Other companion nutrients are riboflavin and choline and betaine or trimethylglycine, as well as vitamin B6, preferably in the form of pyridoxal 5-phosphate. So these are the methyl donors for the brain. Other supplements that are helpful. Well, fish oil seems to be helpful. Fish oil fluidizes the membranes in the brain, makes them less stiff and more readily responsive. But in particular, DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, seems to be the business end of the fish oil that is helpful for staving off cognitive decline. It's certainly been shown to be helpful in the eye, another form of nervous system tissue. And so therefore, there are some studies that suggest that DHA is helpful at the beginning of life for mom to take when she's getting ready to deliver a baby, because DHA helps the baby's brain. Or DHA can be used in formula. It's certainly present in breast milk, natural breast milk, but it only recently has been added back to formula and seems to have a beneficial effect on the IQs of babies and young children. But also the other extreme of the life curve, as one advances through older age and moves towards the dementia risk zone, DHA seems to have a beneficial effect. Not DHEA. I guess we can jump to DHEA because it sounds a lot like DHA. One is docosahexaenoic acid from fish oil. DHEA is a hormone. And actually, studies have shown that DHEA works as a good antidepressant in older individuals. It has a mood-elevating effect. It is slightly anabolic, so it helps to maintain muscle mass and may encourage bone strength. But it also may have a good effect on cognition and mental function. It seems to be sort of an energizer for the body and brain. So that's distinct from DHA. DHEA is also beneficial. Acetyl L-carnitine is one of the helpful things for the brain, and it's a form of carnitine. You've heard of L-carnitine. Well, acetyl-carnitine, by putting the acetyl, it's sort of a extension on the carnitine molecule, it enables the carnitine to traverse the blood-brain barrier, which is notoriously resistant to many supplements and medications. But ALC gets into the brain. It's structurally similar to acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter, but also functions as a source of L-carnitine for the brain. L-carnitine is an energy shuttle. It helps to allow fat to pass into the cell and into the mitochondria where it can be properly burned as fuel. And since the brain is a high-energy organ, always necessitating lots and lots of fuel, acetyl-L-carnitine may be helpful for enhancing brain energetics. And clearly, mitochondrial dysfunction or a loss of the energetic capacity of the cell is highly implicated whenever they do Alzheimer's research. What they're basically saying is that instead of having a 150-watt bulb in your head, you've only got a 60-watt bulb. It's a little bit like having a brownout in your brain, not sufficient energy production. So anything that enhances energy production has got to be good for the brain. Some double-blind trials have found that treatment with 2 to 3 grams per day of acetyl-L-carnitine slowed the deterioration of mental function in patients with Alzheimer's disease. I remember this from medical school in the 1980s. I sent a paper on acetyl-L-carnitine to my neurology professor, who ended up being dean of Albert Einstein College of Medicine, trying to make the case for ALC supplementation in his patients with dementia. And he he's a good guy. And he said, well, that's very interesting. we'll keep an eye on it. He probably never used it. But that's the nature of conservatism in medicine. When it comes to brain energetics, it's also been proposed that NADH is helpful. It is called nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, or NADH, and it's available in a product that was formulated in the 1980s and perhaps the early 90s, called Inada. It's not that popular these days. I haven't found it that dramatically helpful for my patients. It's also rather expensive. It is thought to promote the synthesis of certain neurotransmitters in the brain. And in a few small trials, it has helped, but the research is kind of weak. However, there's a new kid on the block that I'm taking a look at. I haven't yet fully integrated into my practice, but it's called nicotinamide riboside. And actually, the studies are pretty good on it. And, we're always looking for that thing that can promote energetics in the brain, because anything that can promote energetics, like acetyl-L-carnitine, or the next one I'll talk about is coenzyme Q10, that's got to be good for brain activity. So let's move to ubiquinol, or coenzyme Q10. Actually, I prefer ubiquinol these days, because I think that it is a supercharged form of coenzyme Q10, but coenzyme Q10 works fine for a lot of people. Note that one of the problems with statin drugs is statins prevent the synthesis of coenzyme Q10. So we talked earlier about, are statins good for the brain? Some doctors say, you've got Alzheimer's disease, you should take a statin because it'll improve the circulation of your brain. Well, you'll also interrupt production of coenzyme Q10. And that probably isn't good for brain energetics if you think at all that the mitochondria of the brain has something to do with your ability to think, focus, and remember. So we generally recommend ubiquinol. And in neurological diseases, we really go high. So there's actually research on Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, in which, and they're doing this at major institutions at Columbia and at Einstein and various major medical schools across the country. The research is utilizing very high doses of coenzyme Q10, like 2,000 or 3,200, doses that would be ordinarily very expensive. And you can quaff a lot of 400 milligram coenzyme Q10 wafers or pills. That would be fine. Alternatively, you can take ubiquinol, which I think is about, probably about two or three times stronger than ordinary coenzyme Q10, and get away with taking less to power your brain. I would recommend, if you're going to be serious about this, maybe take, 400, 600 of ubiquinol, or 1,200 to 1,600 of coenzyme Q10. Other things that are helpful, you know, everybody knows about phosphatidylserine. Easy way to remember that it has something to do with memory is because of its abbreviation, which is PS. P as in PS, I forgot to tell you. Okay. Phosphatidylserine is, it's a normal component of cell membranes. It actually if you look at cell membranes and you analyze them, they have a very high content of phosphatidylserine. And one thought is that in neurodegenerative disease, the membranes deteriorate. So by supplying patients with Alzheimer's phosphatidylserine, you may see some benefit. The studies show some degree of benefit. Administration of 200 to 300 milligrams per day of phosphatidylserine for 3 months produced modest improvement compared with placebo in certain measures of cognitive function in patients with Alzheimer's. I would say it's not something that will knock it out of the park for you, but it's, I think, an essential part of support for people with impaired brain function or neurological disease. I also use it in multiple sclerosis, which is a topic that we'll take on later in our clinical focus series. Good old-fashioned choline. Well, you know, they used to use lecithin, but now we have PC, which doesn't stand for politically correct. It stands for phosphatidylcholine, which is the business end of the lecithin. It's a very purified form of lecithin. And the reason is that choline is a precursor to acetylcholine, which is the neurotransmitter, the main neurotransmitter that mediates important brain functions. So high doses of choline have been shown in some studies to improve brain function. I got to say that it's not a powerhouse in terms of staving off Alzheimer's disease. It's just it's something that's good for brain support. I no longer recommend lecithin. I think that's sort of a very 60s and 70 things that kind of was popular in the old days, thought to be helpful for heart disease. But there are some doctors who are actually injecting concentrated phosphatidylcholine, which is popular in Europe in patients. I haven't yet adopted that approach to the treatment of neurodegenerative disease, but there's some doctors who really believe that that is helpful. Ginkgo. All right. Can't forget ginkgo when we're talking about memory and cognitive decline. There are many studies on ginkgo, some positive, some negative. Sometimes it has to do with the quality of the ginkgo. Sometimes it has to do with the dosage of ginkgo. The usual dosage used in the studies is 120 to 240 milligrams per day. It generally comes in 60 milligram capsules. You know, I tell patients to take as many as six of them a day. And, you know, if patients don't have a positive response to three a day, one three times a day, I'll say take six. They don't see a lot of negative effects of ginkgo. One concern is that treatment with ginkgo could increase the risk of bleeding. Their reports on that are very few and far between, and usually the bleeding problems occur when patients are concurrently taking another medication like aspirin or a blood thinner like Coumadin, and it's hard to pin it on the ginkgo as the problem, which they usually do. If you're taking both a supplement and a drug, blame the supplement. Also need to talk about melatonin. Is something which, has the reputation of enhancing sleep, and that may be the basis of its action against Alzheimer's disease, because better sleep leads to a reduction in the risk of cognitive decline. But also there's some separate evidence for melatonin being a potent antioxidant, and melatonin may protect neuronal cells from damage. So what's interesting is that melatonin also seems to dramatically relieve one of the major symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. Anyone who has cared for someone who is demented knows that they are likely to suffer from what's called sundowning. When the sun goes down, they become very agitated. They have very poor sleep quality at night, and they sometimes become delirious. You know, the lack of stimulation, and they just go a little nutso. And melatonin in a recent study was shown to dramatically reduce the incidence of delirium in patients who are suffering from dementia. So think melatonin as a possible accoutrement. You know, I got to point out at this point, you know, we have a couple more things to discuss, but these regimens can be very complicated. And really, the success or failure of these regimens depends on a very engaged family and caregiver. And so it's really tough because many of the Alzheimer's patients, they don't know what's in their self-interest. They sometimes are very reluctant to take a lot of supplements. So it takes a lot of cajoling and a lot of structure and encouragement to get patients to take this many supplements and the proper supplements. So it's always the challenge that we're up against where you can say, well, great, you know, take this and this and this and this and this and this. But the patient is not, you know, going to be that compliant. And we need a very, very good support structure to promote success. And often we have that. We have families who come with the involved individual, and caregivers are present, and they learn what diet is helpful, and they learn what supplements are helpful. And that's the only way that's going to work. Okay, we have a couple more. Curcumin. Curcumin has been shown, it's a great anti-inflammatory, and it seems to work in the brain. So studies have been conducted at very prestigious institutions looking at curcumin as a way of slowing dementia. And, in fact, a big study was done at UCLA on that subject. Probably there are other studies in other institutions. And the problem seems to be getting enough curcumin into a person because it's not that bioavailable. Newer forms of curcumin are liposomal. They're enclosed in small liposomes, which are guarantee better absorption. My favorite product is Meriva. You can check it, M-E-R-I-V-A. You can find it at drhoffman.com. But more and more they're going for not just ground-up turmeric, but highly concentrated curcumin in a liposomal form that's more bioavailable. It gets delivered to the brain in higher concentrations. And that seems to have a slowing or beneficial effect on brain deterioration. On the inflammatory principle, based on the fact that it is a strong anti-inflammatory phytonutrient. Others that are helpful, well, we've got resveratrol. Resveratrol from red wine may be beneficial, and or a polygonum, which is a flower source, a purple flower source of resveratrol. And there are actually animal studies which show dramatic reduction in the risk of age-related dementia in animals. These have been hard to translate to human studies, but there's enough scintillating evidence there to encourage me to include resveratrol among the supplements that I use to target dementia and cognitive decline. So my favorite resveratrol product is called Longevinex. Also, there's, while we're at it, vitamin D may have anti-inflammatory properties. It's not clear that vitamin D makes you smarter, but vitamin D can affect mood, and some studies suggest that it may improve cognition as well. So adequate levels of vitamin D are important. Huperzine is an interesting herb which has beneficial properties. Huperzine is something that has been used in China for a long time. It's derived from Chinese club moss, and it has been shown to be an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. Well, what does that mean? Well, a lot of the drugs that are used to target Alzheimer's disease are acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. So it is actually significantly more selective and substantially less toxic than some of the drugs currently in use in conventional medicine, drugs like Aricept, for example. So This it's been used as a prescription drug in China since the 1990s. It's called Huperzine A, and it at a dose of 200 micrograms twice daily produced measurable improvements in memory, cognitive function, and behavioral factors in 58% of Alzheimer's patients. So that's a good one to employ. Vinpocetine is also something that can be used as a circulatory enhancer. It is present in lots of Alzheimer's formulas, so that may be useful. Bacopa is, there used to be a supplement for attention deficit disorder called Focus Factor. I think the Federal Trade Commission clamped down on them because it implied claim that it was an ADD medication, but Bacopa is used traditionally as a mental enhancer. It's not on my A list, but it's certainly got a place among the supplements that might be plausibly used in support of patients with cognitive decline, memory disorders, Alzheimer's disease. There you have it. I think it's a pretty good rundown of some of the things that can be plausibly used and helpful. And in our newsletter and eventually on our website, we'll provide you with a compilation of some of the supplements that can be used for slowing down, preventing, or reversing cognitive decline. Good information on slowing cognitive decline you can find in any of the books by Dr. David Perlmutter. He's a neurologist in Florida who has written some best-selling books on enhancing cognitive function, including Grain Brain most recently. And there you can get some more detailed information on this subject. So thanks for joining us. And upcoming clinical focuses or foci will look at a variety of medical conditions, diseases, and medical themes, and we'll delve into them in detail for you as we do with each Intelligent Medicine podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.